Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. Radical Russ here backstage at the 25th anniversary Seattle Hemp Fest, and I'm joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Ed Fortune, the New Jersey weed man is here. How you doing, Ed?
I'm good, Russ. How are you?
I'm glad to have you here. I've been following your exploits out there with your temple out in New Jersey. Give people the rundown on what you've been doing and how the cops have been busting you.
Well, lately it's just been... We're going tit for tat at each other. But, you know, for those who don't know, about a little bit more than a year ago, I opened a restaurant and a temple in downtown Trenton, New Jersey. And I thought I had hit like a gold mine and it was going to become like this nice spiritual destination place. And the first 10 months, that's how it was. I mean, there were people coming in, there's television, there was Wall Street Journal covered it. I really felt like I had made this concept Main Street in New Jersey. Well, at least State Street, that's where I'm located. And, you know, right across the street from City Hall, and all that was planned.
You're not hiding nothing. You're up front with these guys.
Exactly. Well, everything was fine until February this year, and then it seemed like all hell broke loose. Basically, I got into a pissing contest with a captain and a lieutenant on the police department where they argued that I had to close at 11 o'clock at night, both my business and my temple. And my argument was, I'm a temple. I don't have to.
So there's no argument about the business. They have business hour laws or something?
Yep. Okay. There's a legitimate, and my business was closed, but they wanted to insist that it was all the same.
No, okay.
And I'm saying, no, there's two separate entities here in this building. Actually, it's three entities in this one building. But, you know,
because they're not running around closing down Catholic midnight mass.
Yes, and that's exactly what I said. And I don't know, it just became a pissing contest, but they would show up with 21 police officers and a dog and say, it's after 11. You know, like they really didn't want me selling chicken wings after 11. Like, and it's so funny. I even made a hashtag, no chicken wings after 11. So I want your listeners now, go to that hashtag, no chicken wings after 11.
All right, love it.
But it turned into a full-fledged battle. I used my camera system to videotape them, and you have to understand, I made an announcement to everybody that I was trying to do a reality show there. I'd installed like this big $10,000 camera system. We had all these floaters there. And we were capturing video of people coming and hanging out. And right in the middle of that, the police officers started harassing us. So, of course, our cameras and our editing focused now on them. And it turned into, like, Trenton Police Department. And you know what the police did? They raided us and took all our camera system and all our hard drives.
Of course.
They took the show.
Yeah.
They stole our intellectual property. So that's part of the argument you'll see coming out soon. But police officers aren't that smart. If you arrest somebody and you take all their shit, then all their shit becomes a discovery and you're allowed to have it anyway.
Right.
So, I don't know. Like, but this didn't make sense the way, you know, somebody had to think this out.
Yeah.
What? He has a camera system and he's recording us and he's putting it on the internet? Let's go take it.
Right. Didn't think to step two, though.
A lawyer would have knew right away. Wow. If you take it and he fights it, he's going to get it all in the discovery anyway. He's going to put it on the internet anyway.
Right.
You know what I mean?
With like, extra exposure because of the scandal.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I don't know. And that's exactly what happened that night. I can tell you the night it happened. On the 28th of February, this police officer showed up at about 1 o'clock in the morning and told us that we had to shut it down. And like I said, no. It became a tit for tat, you know. It was a pissing contest, and I basically was telling him, but this is a church. It's a temple. I registered it that way. And I explained it to him, and he went from being a police officer, when he started losing the argument, he just went meathead, just totally like, okay, here's the deal. It's after 11 o'clock, and either everyone has to leave or we're coming in. Like, after he went there, I went inside, and I told everyone what he said. And said that, listen, I'm going to stay here, but if anybody wants to leave, like, now's the time to leave. And about 30 people left. About 15 people stayed. I was one of them. You know, after a few minutes, the police officers left. But then they came and did it again the next week. you know, like just showed up on Saturday night and just did this. So I filed a lawsuit against the police department that they were harassing me.
Right.
You know, which is funny. Then they filed in their response, in their police report, they lied. They said that they came there because of a fight, because of disturbances. Listen, the entire system is...
Wait, there was a fight at the pot temple?
Yeah. This is what
right.
they, no, this is what they said.
Right.
This is what they wrote in their police report.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But they seized the camera system that shows that that's not true.
Right.
Right? But I had, I don't know, I had argued that this was incredible how I had proof that they were lying.
Right.
And they came and stole it. And, like, it's for some reason no one thought, I have a right to it no matter what. I think I should give it back anyway. I don't know if they're going to file any asset forfeiture charges on me. The ironic thing about the camera system that they came and stole, guess they charged me for having it. Now, there was a law that was developed in the late 1980s, early 90s in New Jersey. And it was designed to stop crack houses.
Okay.
And I'll explain that law first. It's called a fortification law. You're not allowed to fortify your house, which is kind of funny.
Can't make moats and armor and shit.
Yeah, but these are laws that are only enforced in urban areas.
Oh.
It's called a fortification law. I'll explain why it happened, but the same exact thing happens like in suburban towns, they call them safe houses.
Right.
And in an urban area, the same exact thing, doing the same exact thing, would be called fortification, and you can be charged with it.
Damn.
And, right. And now it came from during the 80s and early 90s, the crack houses, people would set up crack houses with a little opening, and someone would come and you just reach your hand in, you would never see who it was, and they'd pass it. And then when the police showed up trying to break the door down, it would be so barricaded inside, the whole inside, by the time the police would get in there, either it was flushed down the system or the barrel of acid would be bubbling when the police officers got up there.
Right.
You know, and that was all they would get. So they made these laws about fortifying the place and all that and whatever. So that's a law in itself with a mandatory term that can't be served concurrent with whatever other charge you get hit with.
Wow.
Like, it's meant and designed to really
punish you. Has to be consecutive
you.
Term. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. So
it's
you get
in the legislation. Well, that was in the early 90s. Everybody didn't have camera systems now, but everyone has camera systems now. That was one of the things that's in there. And, yo, I have a business.
Oh,
why
so
wouldn't
so the
I have
fortification
a camera
law
system?
Was to not have surveillance.
Crack houses.
Okay.
Right, part
okay.
of the crack houses. It said if they were designed to, like, warn the police.
Yeah.
Warn you of the police coming.
Right, right. Lookouts.
Yeah. And, like, this here, I mean, my camera system was a security system, and it was put there for a reality show.
Right.
Like, what are you talking about? You're going to, like, they reach so far back, it just seems vindictive and punitive for them to do this, which is funny. I don't think any juror is going to find me guilty of that. They all have, half my jurors are going to have cameras, too. This has nothing even to do with weed.
Right,
now.
Right, right.
They're going to charge me with fortification of a building. Just that charge alone, when I dispute that to a juror, I'm like, how many of you have cameras in your house?
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Understand
if the police raided your house now and you had drugs in there, just say you had marijuana, your son had marijuana, your kids had marijuana in the house, you can be found guilty of fortification of your premises, like I'm charged with.
Yeah.
Like it's really, but really what it was vindictive. They wanted to steal
sure
my
is.
Camera system.
And hasn't this now gone to the point of them seizing the weed mobile?
And they seized my weed
mobile. This is like the cops taking away the mystery machine from Scooby-Doo. This ain't
yeah,
right.
Exactly. I've
right.
compared it to Batman. I mean,
the Batmobile, yeah.
Batman's got a Batmobile. Weed Man had a weed mobile. And, you know, can you imagine if Batman had his Batmobile taken and crushed?
It's just destroyed now.
They took the weed mobile and they crushed it. It's a block of steel. There was a reporter trying to get a picture of the block the other day.
Yeah.
The place that has it wouldn't let them
so
take
So how did
it
get to the
of
point
it.
Of it being destroyed, though? I mean, they don't normally do that, do they?
No, it was vindictive.
Yeah.
They raided my location on April 27th.
Okay.
Okay. They raided it. On the 29th, I went up there and they towed three cars. Including the Wiimobile. On the 29th, I got bailed out, and then I went to bail the cars out. And they said that they were seizing it under asset forfeiture laws.
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing I can do about that now but wait and fight it out.
Sure.
Okay. Well, apparently, at some point the police made a decision not to include it under the asset forfeiture laws.
Okay.
So the tow company now was racking up a bill and everything. And the tow company, because no one said anything, because I didn't say anything, because they told me they were seizing it under asset forfeiture. So I didn't say anything to the tow company. I was just like, this is going to be part of the case as it proceeds through. The tow company, after something's not claimed within a certain amount of time, gets a salvage title.
And destroys
things that they feel that can't be sold anywhere.
So the cops tell you it's seized.
I find out, yeah.
And then they don't tell you that it's no longer seized.
Right. Right. So how am I supposed to know?
Right. And it's not like the tow company's going to call you.
Right. And then at some point, they serve me with the asset forfeiture things that they were trying to get. There's a couple dollars they got, like a very small amount of dollars. And the Weedmobile wasn't on there. That's what made me start inquiring. Like, all right, well, where's the Weedmobile now? Okay, what's going on with the Weedmobile? Sorry, Mr. Fortune. It was scrapped and crushed last week. I was like, what? I think, are you serious? Yo, they hit me right in the stomach.
Yeah.
I really, like, felt bad. I mean, the Weedmobile's life flashed before my eyes.
Like losing a pet.
Yeah. It's like I remembered when it was, like, still just a brown van. I remember when it got painted. I remember when it crossed the Rocky Mountains. I remember crossing the Mississippi. Yes. Oh, my God.
It's first it's love.
Now, and now it's gone. Yeah. That's what happened.
Damn.
I felt like it died.
Damn.
And there are other people that feel that way, too. I mean, people have taken pictures of that thing all over the country.
Sure.
It became a little kind of iconic with me. It was kind of funny to some people. Like, he really drives a Weedmobile.
Yeah.
So,
what
anyway.
Shame.
Yeah. They
so
got
now
it.
You're fighting.
I'm fighting that. Still but, you know, I'm. This comes down to, I always tell people anyway, Americans generally like a David versus Goliath story. Okay. I feel like me fighting the Goliath of government, I have my, you know, I play the role of David to a lot of people. And in this case, them stealing my van and crushing it, it just seems wrong on all levels to so many people,
sure.
Whether they believe that they have about weed or not. So it plays into or supports my argument that I am the David fighting the big Goliath of government. I can't even stop him from smashing my van.
Yeah.
You know, and people are on my side. When this current case comes up, people are going to be fighting to be on my jurors. Most of the time, jurors come in there, and half of them are trying to get off the jury pool. And at my trial, people are going to suddenly realize it's the Weed Man trial, and they're going to want to be there. They're going to want to be there, and some of them are going to make the mistake to say, "I can never put him in jail," and they'll get kicked off the jury. It's the ones who really catch the concept of jury nullification, which I am. I'm publicly teaching my entire region about it again.
Yep.
There's not going to be a jurors are going to totally wonder, like, what is he always talking about, jury nullification? They're going to look. When they find out that I'm on trial, the newspaper's going to be talking about it, they're Googling it. Like, everyone in my area is like, they already they're catching the concept that this dude is saying the government can't get 12. His argument is, he's not wrong, the law's wrong. And calling myself Weed Man for so long and running for office, all that, I come in, I think, as the favorite.
There you go. I love it.
You know, and you know, luckily I've been at it for so long. All these Cub reporters 20 years ago, they're all the editors and stuff now.
That's right.
You know, like, I've been around a long time. There's people who were reporters when I met them, or producers in New York now. You know, that's how long I've been around.
Hi, Gary.
Right on.
People's whole careers have gone right. You know, they've been doing their media career with the Weed Man's presence, and the crazy radical stuff I used to say years ago.
Yeah.
Is mainstream now.
Yeah.
You know, when I used to say, terrorizing black people are way crazier numbers, man. We're the victims, man. We're like, oh my God, man. Why don't you just throw dashiki on, go in the room and cry to himself? You know, I would like, shut up, dude. You know, I would hear virtually that.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
Now, all these statistics that came out, the ACLU did their report, which is really detailed.
Yeah.
And in fact, all these things are are true.
Michelle Alexander's book.
Yeah, it's Michelle. All come out. Yeah, it's all true. And you know what though? It's hard to see it in every community because it's not happening in every community. Like say like some of these inner city urban communities, they'll be able to tell you, hell yeah,
yeah,
they target here.
Yeah.
But somebody in some other like they you know there's a
Boise,
random
Idaho.
Yeah.
We got no clue.
Yeah, there's a random person that gets busted for weed there, but that's because it's the law is being treated equally there.
Yeah.
They're just randomly checking and they come upon you and it's like but in certain communities, man, it's a war, man. It's like a I don't know, it's a targeting factor and weed is the trigger to a whole lot of their investigations and
I always say weed is the key that unlocks the Fourth Amendment.
Yep.
You got the smell, the sight. Bam, we got a reason to search, reason to frisk, all of that.
Yeah, and that's what happens, man.
Yeah.
So, but you know what? Because it's becoming so mainstream, you know, all walks of life, all occupations, all races are disregarding the weed laws. So, in my opinion, they can't get 12. There's no way that all these people are going to feel like, yeah. Why all these people over here are making millions, why these people are doing this, and yeah, he's admitting that it's his. And he says he's sharing it.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to put him in jail? You know what I mean? Like, I want that to be their decision. And I don't think they can get 12 to agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm risking my life to do that, but I'm that confident that you can't get 12 people anywhere. I think, you know...
Well, I know all these legal fights cost money, and you probably need some help getting some fees and stuff. Do you have some websites or anything people can hook up?
I always need help, but, you know, I don't know. I've found that to be the hardest part of all this, that I don't want to sound like I'm crying or whining, but I've never been able to seem to get that extra help. I always end up being the one-man gang. Occasionally, lately, I've been getting local lawyers to help me.
Yeah.
But as far as... Boy, I wish I could have funded some of my fights and arguments in the past. This one here, I think it's going to, you know, I'm a broke guy, but I get like $1 million PR campaign. I can get going, you know. Yeah. I don't know why. Hey, thanks. But the media has always covered me. I'm kind of like the Donald Trump of media. Drag Donald. I mean, Donald Trump's running the whole campaign in the news.
Yeah, isn't that, you know, amazing?
I mean? Yeah, exactly.
He hasn't run an ad yet.
Yes, he doesn't do hardly nothing. You know, but see, in a way... I've kind of been doing that for years. You know, I made a goal like in the late 90s as part of my activism goals was to get in the press once a month.
Yeah.
Dude, there's hardly a time period where I didn't, where
yep.
I wasn't successful since the 90s.
I mean,
I have hundreds of articles, hundreds of different genres, and I called it all the same, whether it was a newspaper or like some radio station that had 100,000 viewers or something, listeners or something, right? As long as I can get in the media at some point. So I kind of created this weed man. But it's a cause thing, you know? And the cause 20 years ago was kind of wacky or whatever. Well, the cause was legitimate, but no one talked about it.
Right.
Okay. But I was reviewed as wacky or a zero. And now... kind of the opposite, almost the hero.
It's come around to you.
Yeah, so that was cool. So now I feel like the real victim, when they stole my Weedmobile, like that's what it looks like. The government stole the hero's Weedmobile.
What a bad PR move that was.
Yeah, exactly.
So is it njweedman.com if people want to hit you up?
Yeah, njweedman.com. Or you can find me on Facebook, same way.
Yeah.
Ed Fortune at Yahoo, EDFORCHION@Yahoo. If you want to find me on PayPal, I have a whole,
there you go.
I have a defense fund set up. But you can find it on NJ.com, NJweedman.com, excuse me, NJweedman.com.
Well, Ed, yep. Have yourself a great hemp fest. I'm so glad to see you here. Sorry about the Weedmobile.
Yeah, man.
I never got my picture in it, never got to see it, and I swore someday I'd be out in the East Coast,
yep.
And it just never happened. Yep. Damn it.
You just almost did.
I know.
We almost, if it came through, you would have sailed it in.
Ah. We're going to go back out to Seattle Hempfest, everybody. Yep. Have yourself a great day, and stay hydrated.